opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good day, everybody. Welcome again to another edition of Boomer Generation Radio. This is your host, Richard Address, coming to you from the studios of WWDB in Philadelphia, WWDB AM 860, and Boomer Generation Radio streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And again, a reminder that if you want to contact the show with some ideas or suggestions or concerns, email us at boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. That's boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. And this morning, we are going to have a whole hour dealing with various types of planning. In our first half hour, we're very, very pleased to welcome an old friend of the show, Peter Hecht from the Hecht Investment Group of Janney Montgomery Scott, a good friend of the show and one of our sponsors. And Peter, I hope that you're on the phone.
Yes, I am. Good morning, Richard. Good to talk to you again.
How you doing, Peter? How are things in you're all right off of Route 73 in beautiful Mount Laurel, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, we are.
And
yes, we are.
Good. Well, welcome back. There's so many things that keep piling up in the media and some conversations about our generation and the baby boomers and dealing with the financial security of our own generation and also our families. So let me again welcome you to the show and thank you for your time and just jump into this whole a series of articles that, again, I keep seeing in various newspapers and magazines that the baby boomers just don't have enough money to retire. And you're in the financial planning business, and I imagine see a lot of our generation coming through your offices. Is that true, or is this just hype?
Well, it's a little bit of both. It's a broad brush to say that a lot of people don't have enough money to retire. There are certain people who have done good planning over the years, have conserved their investments and done well for themselves. There are others that have not done so well for themselves. And it really depends. We see people who are willing to invest, and therefore they have the funds to do so. But we are seeing individuals having to spend more time on budgeting. Some people may be looking at part-time jobs, and some people are looking at career changes.
Yeah, talk to me about that last one, the people looking for career changes. I know the last time you were here a couple of months ago, the real theme that you seem to talk about over and over again, and it keeps coming up in a lot of the different shows that we do, and that's why I wanted, and will come up in the second segment about advanced care planning as well, is having a plan, sitting down with somebody like yourself at Hecht Investments, and actually creating a long-term financial strategy. That seems to be the way to go, correct?
Correct.
And
that's
so
the advice that we give a lot of people that we talk to.
So people who are contemplating a career change, they'll walk into your office and say, you know, I'm done with this. I really have had this dream. I have some savings. This is what I want to do. I want to follow my dream. How do you advise them in that particular situation?
Well, we'll start asking a lot of questions, and I'll use myself as an example. When I was in my early 30s, I changed careers. I used to work for the Department of Justice, and now I'm in the investment business. One of the things that we considered, my wife was a teacher, and therefore I knew we had good benefits, that if there was an emergency in the family or a serious illness, that we had the benefits to cover that. And that was extremely important. But we had to save. We had to pinch pennies. You know, we didn't run out and go to the movies all the time and out to dinner and things of that nature. So it's really a process, and it's something that if someone is married, they need to discuss in great detail with their spouse. They may want to see a financial planner like ourselves. They may want to see a clergy person. There are a lot of resources out there where people can draw on those resources and get information. But they need a lot of information before they make that decision.
A person walks into you, Peter, and says, you know, I really want to save. I know we have to. I have to start putting some money away, but I really we really have a lot of difficulty saving, just living from paycheck to paycheck almost. And we have, you know, have to start saving for college tuition. How do you advise someone to learn the discipline of putting money away for that rainy day or for their own retirement?
Well, we'll help someone budget.
Really?
And a lot of times we run into the issue that people want to save for their retirement, which mm-hmm. is extremely important, but they also want to plan for their child's education, whether it's a newborn or a child 5 or 6 or 7 years old. And oftentimes we will say to them that, and it's interesting, there was a New York Times article back in February that addressed the issue. But the crucial funding for retirement is a contribution that should be made before a child's education. It's kind of like drawing the analogy, you know, when you fly and they come on and they explain to you about putting on the mask first
right.
before you assist the person next to you or your child. It's the same thing here. You've got to take care of yourself first. You can't borrow for retirement. You can borrow for education.
We're talking with Peter Hecht from the Hecht Investment Group of Janney Montgomery Scott in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Their toll-free number if you want to get a hold of Peter and the group is 855-289-2168, and their HechtInvestmentGroup.com on the Internet. And if I'm not mistaken, you're on the social media menu, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. Is that correct?
Correct. The Hecht Investment Group.
So again,
we're on all social media, and we keep people up to date as to what's happening with current events.
There was an article or as a statement by one of the people, Peter from the AARP, who does analysis of trends, except saying that a person needs at least $250,000 for medical emergencies in their portfolio, something they can get a hold of. Is that? Have you seen that to be a true figure? I mean, somebody's going to say, well, I have Medicare, I have supplemental insurance, I have Social Security. Do I really need that much money?
Well, again, it's a broad brush going across a lot of people. I haven't seen that article myself. That's not something that I would say is a rule of thumb in our business.
Mm-hmm.
However, we all know that medical expenses have gone up dramatically. That's where people need to look at long-term health care. And it's expensive.
Right.
It's expensive. There's no doubt about it. But it's catastrophic. It covers catastrophic injuries. I can't say that it's $250,000 because there are other programs that can assist people, government programs that can assist people. I just can't go with that figure of $250,000. It really depends.
Mm-hmm. But it's wise, is it not wise? Let me rephrase the question. For somebody who is making that plan that you so strongly advocate, to put some money away or have something liquid so that, God forbid, in the case of a medical emergency, they can tap into that?
Yes. It depends on their insurance. Also, when you get into that area, we start talking to people about estate planning, and that's where they need legal advice. And we will refer people to attorneys who specialize in either it's long-term health care or estate planning or things of that nature.
Oh, so that's a very interesting statement. So what's the difference between estate planning and financial planning? Because to the layperson, they may say, well, isn't it the same thing?
Well, they can be a part of one another. Financial planning is something, there are different aspects of financial planning that you want to consider. You want to consider retirement planning. You want to consider, under that umbrella is a child's education, health care, long-term health care. What's going to happen to your assets should you pass on?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all a big part of it. There are a number of attorneys, excellent attorneys in the area, in the greater, you know, Delaware Valley area, who specialize in that area. And we often suggest people, if they don't have someone to deal with, we can refer them, or if they have friends or family who've dealt with someone, that they should talk to someone. It's really a team effort. No one person has all the answers. So we, a lot of times, we're in touch with accountants, we're in touch with estate planning attorneys, we're in touch with elder care attorneys, and we try and be the focal point for all of that.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. We do have an elder care attorney coming on this segment of Boomer Generation Radio the end of May to really address some of these issues. And the idea that it's a team, because one of the things I know that is, as you make this plan, you have to consider all the tax considerations. Is that correct?
Correct. Absolutely.
And so you work with people and clients and accountants to create that. What is this? And one other piece of literature that I was looking at in researching for this morning, the 401k. What is a 401k?
A 401k is a program that's provided by a for-profit company that allows individuals to put a portion of their salary away tax-deferred. A lot of times people say tax-free. It's not tax-free because at some point when you draw it out of the 401k or any retirement plan, it's going to be taxable unless it's an account that's set up where it's not. But the point being is that it's a retirement vehicle. Some companies will match a portion of what a person pays up to a certain amount. Some will not. 403B is very similar to a 401k, only it's for nonprofits, religious organizations, hospitals, but they basically have the same function.
And these are voluntary, correct?
Correct.
So,
correct. They're voluntary. They're not mandatory.
I have to ask you this question because I was doing some research for this morning and found this blurb from the country of Australia, who a couple of years ago, when they were looking at what they would consider a retirement crisis, people weren't saving enough for retirement, they thought, unless I misread the article, they mandated that employers must put money away in what was like a 401k. So it wasn't voluntary. It was government policy that you had to do this. Is that something that you think would ever fly here in this country? Would you be in favor of that? I mean, mandated retirement savings?
Personally, I would be in favor of it. A lot of times with the 401ks that we deal with, the employer will indicate that a certain amount is going into the 401k for the employee, and then it's, you know, they set it up where it's an opt-out. In other words, the employee signs on, and then they can opt out and say, I don't want to participate in the 401k. If they don't opt out, it's automatically a portion is put in the 401k. And most of the time what happens is people don't even see that money. They don't even recognize it in the sense that they budget accordingly. They budget it as if they don't have it.
I gotcha. And one other word that gets tossed around a lot. So for people like me who are financially a novice, what is an annuity?
Okay, an annuity can operate like a retirement account. It is like setting up your own pension account. An annuity is offered through insurance companies. There are variable annuities, there are fixed annuities, there are all kinds of different annuities. But it's tax-deferred money that an individual would put away. Let's say, for instance, someone comes to us and says, Peter, we've never put away any money for retirement, but I've been very successful in my business, and I now have $100,000 that I don't need. They can put that money into an annuity, and it can grow for them tax-deferred.
Right,
but there are a lot of nuances. There are fees that are attached. You know, one of the annuity people that I work with said something very interesting, that annuities can be expensive, but it also can secure a lot of money for you in retirement. So you need to sit down with somebody professionally and see what the fees are, see if it fits what you want, what you need, see what the variances are in a variable annuity versus a fixed annuity. So it can be very intricate. It's not just a matter of going in and putting money into an account.
Yeah, one of the things that keeps coming up, I mean, the realities of all the times you've been on is this whole retirement, moving into this second phase or third phase of life can be somewhat more complicated than one could assume just by saying, well, I'll have a couple of dollars and I'll put it in the bank or give it to somebody and then they'll send me a check every month in addition to my Social Security. That this really does require a tremendous amount of planning. And if I'm not mistaken, I think you mentioned also, or one of the themes that you talk about is you can't wait till the last minute. In other words, you got to start having these conversations early. When is the best time? Somebody, let's say, that's for the sake of argument, saying I'm going to retire at age 65. When's the best time for a person to start really talking about these issues?
When they first start getting their first real job.
Really?
Mm-hmm. My son is 32 years old. My daughter-in-law is 30 years old. They both actively participate in their 401ks.
So this is really something that to ensure your retirement or having some foundation, you got to start, as soon as you start working, you start planning.
Yes, and we deal with the children of clients that we've had for a long time. And one of the things that we do, we'll always do an analysis, whether it's a financial plan or a retirement analysis. Usually retirement analysis we'll do when they're older.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll do some sort of a financial plan, and it'll include savings. It'll include expanding their family, putting away for college, participating in their 401k. A lot of the young people that we deal with, we're adamant about participating in the plan offered by their employers. Or if it's not offered by their employers, participating in an IRA or a SEP IRA.
So, and the IRA is
a Roth IRA, a Roth IRA.
And that's like a 401k?
Well, yes, IRAs are also tax-deferred accounts. You can't contribute as much as you could to an annuity or 401k, but the money does grow for you tax-deferred. A Roth IRA, which was named after Senator Roth from Delaware, is a little bit different. You can put monies away, and that money grows for you, and when you take that money out, it is not taxable to you.
Cool.
But again, there are limitations, much smaller amounts that can go in there.
So we're speaking with Peter Hecht from the Hecht Investment Group of Janney Montgomery Scott in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. And once again, you can contact Peter and the Hecht Investment Group toll-free at 855-289-2168. You can visit them on the hechtinvestmentgroup.com. And they're also on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. We'll be back with Peter in a second. But we're talking about planning, and we're talking about in the future, and some of us are concerned about our own parents right now. And if you are concerned about your parents' failing memory or their safety at home and you're not quite sure where to turn for help, may we suggest that you give SeniorWise a call. SeniorWise geriatric care managers can provide a comprehensive assessment and care plan, help keep your loved ones safe at home, screen and monitor in-home services, and help you avoid costly mistakes. They can also ease your loved one's transition to a care facility if that becomes necessary. SeniorWise is a member of the Samaritan family of services, and to speak with a SeniorWise geriatric care manager today, we invite you to call them at 856-552-5166. That's 856-552-5166. And you can log on to www.seniorwisecare.org. That's www.seniorwisecare.org. And if you call them at 856-552-5166, mention that you heard about SeniorWise Care on Boomer Generation Radio. We're back with Peter Hecht from the Hecht Investment Group of Janney Montgomery Scott on WWDB AM 860 here on Boomer Generation Radio, streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And again, that email address, if you want to contact us, is boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. Peter.
Yes.
The the scenario. A man, woman walks into your office. They're 53 years old. They've just been downsized or laid off. They're walking in saying, do I start tapping in, pulling out my money from my retirement, from my 401k? I don't know what to do. How best can we advise them to deal with this concern? I'm sure this is not an unusual circumstance in this day and age.
It's not. Again, we have to sit down with them, see where they are. Have they been saving? Do they have other resources? You know, what's the children's situation? What is their parent's situation? You know, is college on the list? Have they been contributing to college? Maybe they need to stop contributing to college for their kids. You know, there's nothing wrong with paying for 2 years of college, mm-hmm. you know, and letting the child borrow or the parents can borrow for the remaining 2 years. There are a lot of other different things we need to look at. Plus, if need be, there may be community organizations that they need to look at. There's Jewish Federation Services. There's Catholic Charities. You know, there's a number of nonprofits. And you know, we need to see just exactly where they are in life. If they're over 59 and a half, they can withdraw the monies, you know, without any penalty. They'll just have to pay taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're not making any money, probably what they're drawing is a small amount, and they won't pay a lot in taxes. But if they're under 59 and a half, they're going to have to pay the taxes plus possibly a 10% penalty. And so there are a number of variables once again. But again, the theme is, the theory is, you need to take care of yourself first. And a lot of individuals we deal with, it's an emotional thing. I've always wanted to take care of my children. I always have taken care of my children. We're not saying don't take care of them. We're just saying, like the airplane, put the air mask on first, and then help the person next to you or your child.
Could you talk a little bit about this emotional thing? Because I know you've mentioned it a couple of times in previous shows, and you just mentioned it too again. I'm going to hazard a guess that a lot of people really have never factored in or don't factor in the emotional component of financial planning and this whole scenario that you deal with. I'm always struck by the fact that you're a financial planner, but yet my sense is, and we know each other, that you do a lot of, quote, counseling, unquote, in the context of sitting with a couple or a client. The emotional, talk to me a little bit about the emotional component of what you do.
Early in my career, I thought of going back to school and getting a degree in psychology. But yes, it's very true. Retiring in general is a very emotional experience for people, whether they have a large sum of money or not a large sum of money. It can be a very emotional experience for them. What am I going to do? Oftentimes, and I'm sure you have, I'm not going to play golf every day. It'll drive me crazy. Or one spouse will say, I don't want him or her around the house all day long. I want them out.
Right. It's that I once saw a thing that I married you for better or for worse, but not for lunch.
Right. Exactly. Very good. I'm going to use that.
But please do.
It is a very emotional experience. The greatest fear, and we've talked about this on previous shows, is people are fearful they're going to outlive their money, mm-hmm. whether they have a large sum of money, a large estate, or not so large estate. That's the greatest fear they have. And so we help them with budgeting. You know, we try and tell people that, look, when you retire, your portfolio doesn't stop investing. It doesn't stop growing for you. You know, you're still not looking for income investments, whether it be bonds or dividend paying stocks or mutual funds or, you know, whatever it may be. So it doesn't stop growing for you. And also we have at Janney what we call an RIE, a retirement income evaluator. And we will gather all the information. We put it down, we put it on a big screen TV, and we go through everything with everybody, what your Social Security projections are going to be, you know, what your income projections are going to be. If you work part-time, what are you going to be making part-time? So there's a lot of cooking that goes on. And it's a very flexible document. You know, yes, we're going to do this. No, we're not going to do that. And then they come back and meet. We said, we've decided I'm not going to do consulting work. I'm going to do this, you know, so we can make changes. It's not chiseled in concrete. So again, it sounds like an old phrase that I've been using on your show a lot, but it's true. You have to plan. You have to plan.
I think that's
when you buy a home, you plan. You look at the schools if you're going to have a family. What's the neighborhood like? What's the shopping like? What's the traffic like? You know, what are the taxes like? So it's the same thing. Same concept.
I know that. And before I want to mention this before we run out of time for this segment, the Hecht Investment Group, your group sponsors a periodically forums, if I'm not mistaken, for the public. And you have one coming up, I think, on Social Security at the end of the month, the middle of the month. Am I correct on
correct,
that?
Correct. We have one coming up May 22nd. It'll be at the Westin Hotel, which is right on the corner of Fellowship Road and Route 73. If you're coming 295, it's right off the exit of 295. We've put something out on our social networking. We've also put out various emails to individuals, but we're having an expert. This is not someone from Janney or someone from, you know, a mutual fund or an annuity. This is an outside expert in Social Security. We did one once before, which was very successful, and it's open. You know, we just need people to contact us.
What it's the Thursday night, the 22nd of May.
Yes.
What from when to when? What time to what time?
It'll be running from 6 to 8.
Okay, and that's from the Hecht Investment Group. That's a forum on Social Security. Very, very important because there's always, I'm sure you get questions a lot about when do I start taking Social Security? What are the penalties? If I'm disabled, do I wait and wait and wait and wait or whatever? So once again, that's on May 22nd, Thursday night, the Westin Hotel off of 73 in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. That's sponsored by the Hecht Investment Group of Janney Montgomery Scott. And once again, to reach Peter and his group, toll free at 855-289-2168. That's 855-289-2168. And you can visit the HechtInvestmentGroup.com on the internet. And they're also on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And I really also want to compliment you, Peter, because as we say almost every week now, you were recognized by Philadelphia Magazine and New Jersey Magazine as a 5-star wealth manager for 2013 and 2014. And so congratulations on that. And before we have to say goodbye to you for this segment, and again, for people who want to get in touch with you, the toll-free number is 855-289-2168. Just give me one, just again, final caution for people who are in that stage, our generation boomers who are thinking now I really have to start talking about or talking with somebody. Again, what's the most important thing that they have to be concerned about as they plan for their future?
They need to talk to a professional. There are a lot of very good professionals out there. I'm a certified financial planner, so is my partner. We suggest that people look for that designation. You need to plan, and you need to work with a professional. I know you, and I certainly know myself. If we had a plumbing problem, we wouldn't try and do it on our own. We're going to call it a professional.
You can take that to the bank, believe me.
Right. Just one other plug. The speaker is going to be Andrew Larson, who is Director of Retirement Education with the Retirement Learning Center in Minnesota.
So, oh, cool.
He's spoken before, and we're looking forward to it.
Peter Hecht of the Hecht Investment Group of Janney Montgomery Scott. Once again, thank you very, very much, Peter, for being our guest here on Boomer Generation Radio. Say hello to the family. Take care. We'll talk to you later. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing you or talking to you again. Thanks.
Okay, guys. I welcome again back to Boomer Generation Radio, coming to you from the studios of WWDB AM 860 in Greater Philadelphia and streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And again, to reach us, boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio is brought to you by Kendall, a system of not-for-profit communities and services located in 8 states in the Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, and near Midwest regions of the United States. Kendall advocates for and empowers older adults to reach their full potential and is committed to working with others to together transform the experience of aging. To learn more about Kendall, that's K-E-N-D-A-L. We invite you to visit Kendall.org or call them toll-free at 888-759-0128. And to welcome you on the welcome to the Boomer Generation Radio microphones on the Kendall segment of Boomer Generation Radio from the Action Mill, which I have to find out what that is, Robert Piegler and Jethro Haiku. Welcome. Welcome to Boomer Generation Radio, and thank you for coming into the studio. We welcome you. I guess the first question, obviously, is the Action Mill. This is not like a restaurant, the stuff in Bucks County, correct?
No, it's not. And this is Jethro. No, we're a design firm, and we focus on the design of tools and products and services that support organizations and people to make better decisions and have better communication about late life and end of life care.
So you're partners in this. What got you to start something to, of all the things, you know, you could probably wind up doing, you created a company that helps people make decisions about dying?
Well, Jeff, this is Rob. Jethro and I are two of the three partners. Our other partner, Nick Jalen, isn't here today. We've been making tools to help people have difficult conversations for years now, and we just kind of have been upping the ante and what could be more important than understanding what your values are, what the implications are for the choices you make in your day-to-day life, and when you think about getting towards the end of your life, it just ups the ante and makes it, you know, even more clear whether or not you're living your values.
So you have this company, you develop tools for people to have conversations, I guess, on an individual level and on other levels too. So you have before you, I'm looking at these cards. You guys created this thing called My Gift of Grace. It's a card game, a card game. Like, you know, I guess whatever, a kid's game to help people have conversations about dying. Is that a misstatement or is that correct?
That's it's close. I mean, it's it's called My Gift of Grace, a conversation game for living and dying well. And it's a game that includes cards, question cards. There's actually 47 questions, and they're prompts for people to have conversations that they often avoid. It helps people start the conversation with friends, family, or strangers and help them practice this conversation about what's important to you no matter what stage of life you're in. So it's really for anyone to get practice at talking about what's important to them and how that informs the way they think about death and dying and living well until that point in which you die.
Okay, so Rob, why this? I mean, and how did this idea come to be? I mean, you guys sitting around one day at a Dunkin' Donuts saying, you know, let's create a card game to help people talk about dying.
Well, we consider ourselves human-centered designers, which means we pay very close attention to people and their needs and hopes and fears and the specific context of their lives. So we talked to end-of-life professionals and heard from them that, you know, if people just had one conversation with their families before they showed up here, we could be so much more helpful to them. So we were thinking about, okay, so your average person in a family, not necessarily with the imminent end-of-life issue, how could you help these people have these conversations and practice having these conversations? And then thinking about context, we thought, okay, well, games, when families get together and you play Monopoly or charades or something else, you're gathering and having conversations.
So this is designed for like when the family's sitting down for Thanksgiving dinner,
Exactly.
After the pie is served and everybody says, well, what are we going to do now? And you whip out the My Gift of Grace card game. And is that, I mean, without being too facetious, that's really part of the design, right?
Yeah. And I think it might be helpful to share like an example of a question. So in healthcare, there's a lot of talk about advanced directives and having and choosing your proxy, which mm-hmm. is someone to provide decisions for you in the case that in the event that you're not able to make decisions
Correct.
On behalf.
Correct.
So one question that we have, question 22, that gets at that in an interesting way is, imagine you were lost at sea and your family had to pay for the search to find you. Who should make decisions about how long to search for you? So wow. it gets at questions about who you trust and who should make decisions without it being something that is very healthcare focused.
Okay, so there are how many questions?
There's 47.
47 questions, and I guess there's an instruction.
Yeah, there's instructions. There's also thank you chips, which are...
Is that what those little blue...
Yeah.
There's blue little, two little blue chips sitting on the counter here in the studio, and what do those chips do?
So every player, it's a conversation game, so normally games have 3 to 6, 8 players, and the chips are used during the game when you hear or someone does something that you're grateful for, you provide a thank you chip for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way of kind of creating kind of a gratitude flow, which helps people stay in the game.
Now, I know that this is part of, in all seriousness, part of a growing national movement to have what is called the conversation. And we've had, at Boomer Generation Radio in the last year, we had Nathan Kottkamp, who is the creator of National Healthcare Decision Day. He was on last year and... one of the people who is in charge of the Conversation Project out of Boston, they were on, I think, in March or February, if I'm not mistaken, to talk about the Conversation Project. We've talked about this a lot, and I know in synagogues, churches, groups, this is becoming more and more of an issue as boomers age and deal with their own parents. And then in the privacy of those hospital rooms sometimes say, well, wait a minute, is this me in 25 or 30 years? And if so, I'm really scared to death about this. What am I going to do about this? So this is part of this growing conversation. How do you market this? How does somebody get a hold of this project?
So they can go to our website, which is mygiftofgrace.com, and purchase the game. It's $24.95 for one game, and if you buy more than one, it's $19.95 each. We also have a lot of game events and game nights, so we've had over 35 game nights across the country.
Really?
And these are actually public events or private, where on our website we provide a toolkit for people to hold a game event, and then you get a discount for buying games if you register your event with us. And we've even played recently at Reading Terminal Market. In fact, the general manager of the market joined us, and we had about 12, 15 people, some of whom knew each other, some of whom met for the first time, play the game in public. It went quite well. We also have an event for Bucks County, hosted by Chandler Hall, which is a Kendall Corporation affiliate member, and that's on June 16th from 6 to 8 p.m. And it's an event like any other game event where people can show up and actually have quite a bit of fun. I actually recently played at Cherry Hill with Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice with their volunteers. And what was surprising was that there was so much laughter that the people actually asked us to quiet down. So it's surprisingly fun to play, in part because you get at what's important to people and people get to tell stories about, you know, things that are actually quite enjoyable to talk about, but that often we avoid talking about.
Yeah, I imagine in using this technique, you sort of like demystify the whole, I mean, it's like the death cafe thing that's now starting up all over the country. Part of this, I would imagine, then, is to demystify this whole concept of talking about one's own death. And if somebody wants to get a hold of this, they go on your website. How else do they make contact with the Action Mill? You're located here in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, we're located in the edge of Chinatown, Center City,
okay.
Vine
okay.
Street.
So if somebody wants to get a hold of you to talk about this or to order this, other than the phone calls, websites, how do they do that?
Well, if they want to contact us about our main business consulting company, www.actionmill.com.
Go ahead.
Yeah, actionmill.com is a place to reach us and find out more about our work.
Okay. And is there a phone number that somebody can they call to order one of these things, or is everything done on the web?
Currently, we're doing orders online.
Okay. So your company, I want to come back to this because this is fascinating to me. You market yourselves as designers, idea designers. What would be the appropriate term?
Human-centered design, design strategy firm. So My Gift of Grace is a specific solution to a specific problem. We were imagining families. Maybe there's not an imminent end-of-life issue, and we're imagining, okay, so who's the cruise director, the person who brings families together, maybe the person who's focused on caretaking, usually a female member of the family. So that's who we imagine this game for. And it's turned out to work very well that way. Families play it. My family made me play it. I didn't want to push it on them. I enjoy playing it, but I didn't want to push it on them. We spent 2.5 hours at Thanksgiving playing the game.
Really?
Oh, yeah. If people don't have a time limit, they tend to go like an hour and a half or 2 hours. You can keep it down to like 25 minutes, but it goes on. So this is a specific solution, and we found that people in the end-of-life, late-life fields have found this very useful in a professional context for professional development, training, working with residents, patients, and families. We also work with clients directly and use the challenges that they have to focus us and develop specific solutions for them that have nothing to do with the game.
So what other human-centered programs have you designed and developed other than the card game?
So a few years back, actually before we entered this late-life, end-of-life space, we actually designed a game that we're increasingly seeing as very useful in this area, which is it's a decision-making game. Not all our tools are games, but it was a really great project that we actually use internally and we've used with clients. And it's a game that unpacks what a decision really is all about, which relates to who has the authority, what are your values, what level of investment you have.
Power.
And also what kind of decision making, you know, is it a consensus decision? Is it, a decision that one person's going to make, but they want to consult with others? So it's a way of, oftentimes our work is about taking things that are often taken for granted, like decisions, and getting underneath what's really going on in a way that people can interact and collaborate more effectively together.
So businesses would use this?
Yeah. We do a lot of work. We find that our work is really useful in teams of people, sometimes teams across disciplines within an institution, because they often have a lot of communication challenges.
So how long did it take you to design My Gift of Grace?
So My Gift of Grace was a response to a design challenge, which we won by the California Healthcare Foundation. I think the first prototype took us days, maybe weeks. And then that was last May that we won the challenge. And then we spent the summer doing a Kickstarter campaign in the month of July where we raised $41,000 from over 400 backers. And then from about August 1st until probably October, probably 3 months of very intense testing with hundreds of people, dozens of different groups and families playing, and then we released it in December as a product.
So in other words, this thing just really didn't emerge out of the clear blue. This was a response to a challenge from California.
Yeah, and it's frequently how we work. We were interested in at late life, end of life, and did a lot of interviews and shadowing people, and we thought, like, okay, we're learning a lot about this area, but the way to really understand what's going on and really deepen our relationships is to do something specific and useful. So we went from that and we looked for an opportunity to design something, a concrete, specific thing. And through that design process, that our testers were families who were getting together to talk about their end-of-life plans anyway, hospice nurses and other people in end-of-life work. So we got a specific tool that people found very useful out of this. We built a network of supporters who are excited and invested in improving this. You know, our business is, there's a business part of our business. We want to design useful things that people buy, but there's also kind of a social movement aspect of this also. Like, we really want to help improve how people live and how people end their lives. So we do both of those simultaneously as part of kind of designing and organizing at the same time.
We're talking with Robert Pegler and Jethro Haiku, two of the partners from Action Nil here in the Delaware Valley, here on Boomer Generation Radio on WWDBAM 860. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio is brought to you by Kendall Outreach, serving the field of aging by raising public awareness and advocacy around important issues of older adults. Through education, training, and implementation of comprehensive approaches to safe, individualized, long-term care practices, Kendall Outreach has been sharing Kendall's approach to quality care with consumers, advocates, providers, government agencies, and related organizations since 1989. And to learn more, visit kendall.org, that's K-E-N-D-A-L.org, and click on Outreach, that's Kendall Outreach, K-E-N-D-A-L.org, and click on the Outreach icon. And before we get back to Jethro and Rob to talk about this very, very interesting card game, we have somebody on the line. Hello? Hello? I hope we have somebody on the line. Testing 1, 2, 3. Hello? I guess not. Okay. Let me go back to, it's my technology, challenged, life. Okay. Do we have them? Okay, let's try it again. Do we have somebody on the line?
Yes, hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Carol Papraki calling from Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice.
Okay, hi, welcome to Boomer Generation Radio. And talk to me a little bit about you're calling about.
I'm calling to comment on the Action Mill segment.
They're right here with us, right here now.
Yes, and I just wanted to say that that Samaritan is one of those organizations that really has been jumping on that trend across the country to really try to foster conversations in our own community in South Jersey. And we have been so grateful to the work that the Action Mill has provided, because we really have found My Gift of Grace to be a wonderful tool. As you noted, that it seems almost irreverent to say, well, you know, we're going to play a game, but we've been doing this with our staff, with our volunteers, as Jethro mentioned, and in fact have another event tomorrow, on Thursday, on May 8th, where Rabbi Adress and Jethro will be featured speakers. And we really have found, as Jethro said, that, you know, people come into it very tentatively, almost unwillingly, and then find themselves really engrossed in these conversations. So it has proven to be a wonderful tool.
Thank you. And that when is that program? It's Thursday night at McCor Shalom at what time?
It's Thursday morning.
Thursday morning. That's
noon. And it's going to be on Timely Conversations, and the game won't actually be played that day, but questions from the game will be used, as well as an overview by you, Rabbi. And so we are looking forward to that, and we invite members of the community, if they are willing and want to learn more about this topic, to be able to come to that event.
It's Thursday morning. I made a mistake. Thursday morning at 10 o'clock at Congregational McCor Shalom.
That's correct.
850 East Evesham Road in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Thanks a lot for calling in and participating in this conversation about this very, very interesting. And you said you played it with the staff at Samaritan?
We opened it out to our staff, and it wasn't mandatory. And we had, you know, over 20 staff members show up. And, again, the laughter that ran through the room. And I don't want to say that people weren't taking it seriously,
no.
But it was just that when people really started to do these questions with one another, it was fascinating. People that I've worked with for many, many years, you know, learned a different side, and I found myself, you know, being forced to confront some of the questions. It's things that, as Jethro said, that, you know, were put in a different way that really forced you to really think and see where you stand on something. So it proved to be a very, very fruitful endeavor, and our staff, you know, a couple of staff members that I sort of dragged in unwillingly, come on in, come on in, come on in and play, and left praising it, you know. So it's been a very worthwhile endeavor. And then the public event that we had at the Cherry Hill Library, same kind of thing. People of all ages and found it to be a very useful way of framing their thoughts and perhaps as an opening icebreaker perhaps with their family. So I encourage people to take a look at the site and really get involved, because as we've been trying to say to the community, these are conversations that you need to have at the kitchen table, not in the ICU. And tools like this really do help to frame that.
Okay, thank you. Thursday morning, Congregation Makor Shalom. It's open to the public. Anybody can come. 10 a.m. Boy, for some reason I have something that's going on Thursday night because I'm fixated. Phillies aren't losing, so yet. 10 a.m. to noon. 10 a.m. to noon. Congregation Makor Shalom for this program with the Action Mill and my gift of grace card game. So that's 10 a.m. to noon. Congregation Makor Shalom Thursday, the 8th of May. Thank you very much for calling in. Say hello
to
Samaritan for us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I wanted to also just thank Carol and Samaritan. They've been great partners and clients, and we're just having a great time working with them.
Have other hospice organizations contacted you about the game?
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a hospice in New York State that bought one game for every staff member as a gift.
Oh, wow.
It's been hospices all over the country right now are learning about it, and some are playing it with the volunteers, with their staff. We often encourage staff to play first as a way to learn more about the game, as well as how, you know, to begin a conversation with the staff about how they can improve and use the game in their work day to day.
It just occurred to me while you're talking about this, one of the groups that I think would be, and I don't know whether you've reached out to this group, because there's national organizations, the chaplains, there are national organizations of hospital chaplains, and chaplains are so important. They're really frontline people engaged with families. Have you been in touch with the chaplains group?
In early on during our testing, we had a room full of chaplains play at a local hospital, and they were great and like our toughest crowd. Like at first, they were, many of them were not amused at the idea that it was a game. But once they played, the room again was full of conversation and laughter and chips, thank you chips flying around.
Yeah, I want to imagine that would have been very interesting because, as I said, that this group is really, as the chaplaincy itself becomes more professional and serious, taken quite serious. And I know from my teaching at our seminary, there's an increasing number of colleagues who are going into chaplaincy and really see it as really sacred work, that they would probably gravitate to this as a tool, as a real tool.
Yeah, and I think I wanted to share a bit about my experience, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what these conversations are, and sometimes we make it very heavy by talking about it like within a
It seems there are a lot of people laughing, and every time somebody talks about it, there are people laughing,
which is
good. I mean, humor is great.
Yeah, and I think humor is also something that helps you to keep things from being too heavy, and so you've made it this kind of conversation, which is really about living, which I think, you know, from whether it's a religious or non-religious tradition, that's the kind of conversation that people want to have. And when I was 20, my father was diagnosed with stomach cancer. It was terminal. And, for 5 months, I had this opportunity to either run away out of fear or be meaningfully involved in his care. And I decided to be meaningfully involved in his care. And that experience of bathing him, of taking care of him, and talking with him was so transformative. And even though there was heavy conversations in it, there was a lot of beautiful times with him. And my experience with my father in that last part of his life, and the work I did since in bereavement, it changed the way I think about these conversations. And what I was bringing to my part, because everyone in the Action Mill participated in the design of the game, what I brought was this perspective that these conversations aren't what people think they are. They can be transformative. They can have humor. So I went into the design process thinking, can I give people just a little bit of that experience of the kind of conversations I have with my father without the need for someone to be terminally ill.
So we've talked a little bit about this game being played by people, by chaplains, by hospice staff people, by groups of people. But you mentioned something. Have you guys played this with people who are terminally ill? Is it applicable to somebody who is on those last stages of life as a message, as a means of reflection or legacy or taking a life review?
During the design of this game, there's a woman who moved back to Philadelphia to be with her mom, who is dying of brain cancer, and she wanted to play with her mom, but she wanted to get familiar with the game first. So I played the game with her, and then she went and played with her mom and her family. So I haven't played directly with somebody in late stages, but we've heard stories, yeah.
And I think also it's particularly useful, I think, even if, you know, potentially they got terminally ill or a person may or may not be even able to play, given what stage they're in. But my sense is that caregivers playing could be really useful as a way of getting, grounded and to build a sense of trust and collaboration of caregivers, which, you know, at a time when families are often under a tremendous amount of stress.
I would imagine that over the course of the years, if you monitor this, you're going to pick up a variety of very, very powerful stories as people engage in the game, My Gift of Grace. And I don't know whether it's plans to collect any of these stories, but I would imagine that it would be very, very powerful and helpful to other people to see how this conversation can get started through a means that, as you were saying, is not necessarily what we would think of the catalyst.
So we're looking to do that formally, but already there's kind of a culture around it that's happening. If you play more than once, you have memories of like your good answer or a point where you learned something new from somebody else, and you share that with people you're playing the game with. So when you play with strangers and friends, you end up spreading that stuff around.
So before we run out of time, we only have a couple of minutes left. Rob Jethro, walk us through again how someone or some organization who wants to pursue My Gift of Grace gets a hold of it and contacts the Action Mill, you guys.
Sure. So to learn more and buy the game, you go to mygiftofgrace.com, and it walks you through it, very simple steps. To learn more about the Action Mill, it's actionmill, MILL.com. And if people are interested in talking with me about the work we do as the Action Mill, my phone number is 267-984-3493.
All right, give us that one more time real fast.
Mygiftofgrace.com, actionmill.com, and my phone number, 267-984-3493.
We have 1 minute. I want just the one lesson from playing this game with hundreds of people around the area, and what's the one takeaway that you have from this?
This is Rob. I played recently with some folks who are in late life and end of life care, and it's generally transformative, but I learned some things about parents and children that you'd think I'd know, but I didn't.
Thank you very much. Rob Hagler and Jethro Haiku, partners in the Action Mill here in Greater Philadelphia, and My Gift of Grace card game to have the conversation about end of life care. MyGiftOfGrace.com. Thank you, and a reminder that this portion of Boomer Generation Radio has been brought to you by Kendall, the system of not-for-profit communities here on the East Coast, Kendall.org. Thank you very much. See you all next week.